Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morning, Dr. Bryce Edwards from Victoria University. How are you, mate?
Hi, Johnny. Yeah, I'm good, actually. Yep.
Okay. Well, I guess one of the stories of the week is Labor has put forward some fresh tax policy, specifically regarding a wealth tax or a capital income tax after ruling them out last year. Why this about turn?
Yeah, so we haven't really heard that much from Labor since they lost the election last year. Christopher Hipkins has been a bit quiet, and one of the big issues that the party's been debating really for a decade or more is tax reform. You know, this is the big issue that allows governments to afford things they want to pay for and redistribute money, which can help fix inequality, poverty in the country. And so again, they're looking at some sort of tax reform that might involve a capital gains tax or a wealth tax, and this is only a debate within the party at the moment. So Hipkins is being clear that they don't actually have a policy yet, but they're going to bring a new one at the next election.
It's up for discussion.
Be progressive.
Well, I mean, what are the potential benefits or drawbacks of implementing a wealth tax compared to a capital gains tax or a land tax?
A wealth tax is one where you have an annual sort of levy on the wealthy. So if you have millions of dollars in assets, and you would have to have millions, like this is in the wealth tax on everyone, if you have over $2 million in assets, you have to start paying a percentage of that wealth each year. And so the Green Party had a similar proposal at last year's election. And so in some ways it's more straightforward than a capital gains tax.
Yep.
And I mean, all these different taxes have pros and cons. I guess one of the big cons for the wealth tax is that the wealthy won't like it, and that some of them may either leave the country, move to Australia, move to somewhere else that doesn't have such a big wealth tax, or they might move their assets there, and that's not particularly good for the country. So, and whether it would even work very well is probably one of what the critics put against it.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I guess just on that, on the wealth tax and the annual, paying an annual amount on your $2 million of assets. So how could this affect individuals who are asset rich but cash poor?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because some people might own houses or all sorts of assets, but not actually be selling them, and might not. I mean, if you're say a retired person, but you own a big expensive house, you'll still get a bill each year under a wealth tax, and so you might have trouble paying that. So that is one of the criticisms of it. But the answer that proponents put forward is, well, you've got a big asset there, so you can either reverse mortgage it, and get money from the bank as a loan to pay that, or you can effectively sell your property,
Get a small house.
And get something cheaper.
Yep.
So there are answers to it, but it does, like all taxes, it is a bit messy.
Okay, just considering the historical context here, Bryce, why has New Zealand been hesitant to adopt a more progressive tax, or to adopt more progressive tax measures like a comprehensive capital gains tax or wealth tax? Why are we just not keen?
Gee, Johnny, it's a big one for me to answer, because, I mean, you're absolutely right. New Zealand doesn't have those progressive taxes that most of our comparable countries have. In the OECD, it's quite common to have a more comprehensive capital gains tax or a wealth tax or even a land tax, and it hasn't really got onto the agenda in New Zealand, which is...
Why? Because people see these like crumbling hospitals and these under-resourced schools, but people are just not keen to pony up and go, hey, look, there's an area of something that we could get some money from.
Yeah, I mean, I guess some will just say that, well, the tax system's working okay as it is. We don't need these other taxes. We have a good GST tax. We have company tax, income tax. But, yeah, I think the basic answer is that the wealthy have kind of lobbied against it and kind of used all their political capital, if you like, to argue against it. And so just in the last week or two, we've seen with Labor raising, with Hipkins raising this idea, you've had a lot of opinion writers, economists,
already
social tax experts coming out and saying, oh, we couldn't have this. These are all the problems with it.
Yeah, all probably multiple property owners themselves. Now, what are the potential political and public reception challenges for the Labor Party if they proceed with introducing a capital income tax or a wealth tax, and how might they address the challenges?
Well, they really have to sell it. They have to convince the society that this is a good idea.
Yeah.
And that's what Labor has failed to do at previous elections and in government. They haven't really led the debate and got the community kind of talking about it, debating it, and putting forward the reasons in favour of it. So they have to do that. And Hipkins, to his credit, is saying, well, we want to do that early on. We don't want to wait just until the last few weeks of the election campaign to debate this. We want to get those people now. And, yeah, so that's really what has to happen, because if you just leave it to Labor's opponents, you know, and the economists and opinion writers to say this is crap, then they won't win the debate.
Yes. And now, okay, moving on to the Treaty Principles Bill, Mr. David Seymour from the ACT Party is pretty keen on it. What are the main arguments Seymour has presented in favour of his bill, and how does he justify changes?
Yeah, I mean, this is the big one. It's probably the bill that's been the most controversial of this new government. From Seymour's point of view, it's supposed to correct the fact that we've got this treaty that has become quite important in terms of lots of legislation, lots of decisions that the government makes, and that we increasingly hear about the principles of the treaty. Now, in the treaty, there is no kind of section that says the principles, and so it's been interpreted by the courts, and so judges and so forth have decided what the principles are, but no one can really point to what exactly these are. And so Seymour says, look, it's time to finally decide what these are. Either we can have the judges decide what they are, or we can have Parliament and the public deciding what they are. And so that's what he's trying to do. He's saying, here, I'll draw up a list of what I think the principles are, and we can, you know, we can debate that, and we can have a referendum on it, and the people can finally decide what they are. And of course, I think the other big bonus of it for Seymour is that I think it's very popular with a lot of people, so it's good politicking for the ACT Party.
Straight up politicking, but it seems like a rather large waste of money. We ran a news story that it's going to cost like $4 million to draft up, but even National have come out saying that they're not going to support it past the second reading.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of things to criticise the Treaty's Principles Bill over. I'm not sure the cost is a big deal in the greater scheme of things. It's a tiny amount.
Especially $4 million is a lot of school lunches, though.
True. But I mean, there is a fact that a lot of people do feel strongly about this. I think ACT is actually, tapping into what a lot of people are concerned about. But yes, the fact that the National Party and New Zealand First are already saying that they will vote against it. I mean, right in the sense that it's not it is dead already. So, you know, is it a waste of money spending $4 million on something that, ultimately isn't going to go anywhere?
Yeah.
From ACT's point of view, it gives society a chance to debate this.
Mm-hmm.
So he announced yesterday a bit more detail about the bill, and it's going to be introduced to Parliament, and it will then go through to the Select Committee, which will spend 6 months considering.
Oh my God, it's so much work.
Yeah, so
much work on something which is not going anywhere. Yeah. Say it did pass. What are the risks identified by officials if it is passed, it's, particularly into like Māori and Crown relations?
Yeah, so we saw yesterday that the government released the advice from officials that they had received on it. So the Ministry of Justice said, hey, this is going to be very divisive. It's going to increase, polarisation. It's going to create fractiousness, and social cohesion will take a knock from this. And so I don't think the government's too bothered by that.
Yep.
But basically they're saying, look, you know, this is a can of worms, and we're going to end up with some big public fights that'll get nasty about
yes.
this. But do we need this?
Okay. And now on to, we're actually heading overseas. You watched the Trump and Kamala Harris debate, the presidential debate in the US. I think is it potentially going to be the only one?
Yeah, this is the only one scheduled at the moment. Mm. There may end up being another one. Certainly Harris says she wants to have another one, and that's pretty much because she did so well in yesterday's one. So there's a complete consensus, really, that Harris was the victor in the debate over Trump. I don't think she totally dominated it in the way that some commentators are saying, but she did win it, absolutely. Mm. I say that because I don't think Trump necessarily lost a lot of votes in it. So I'm not sure it actually shifted
the dial too much. But what about the people, like the kind of swing voters? Do you think that Harris was strong enough?
Oh, look, she definitely would have won some swing voters over. I'm just not convinced about it now having changed the election entirely. Trump didn't it was pretty crazy. She said lots of crazy things, and Harris looked very presidential, accomplished. She was very impressive. But you know, Trump did still, I think, do quite well on things like the economy for some of those swing voters. I mean, I'm not saying what he said was credible, but it kind of sounded credible. But it was certainly entertaining. Like,
yeah,
you would have heard about the eating cats and dogs thing.
Ah, yes. Trump leaned into that, apparently. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's going to be one of the big takeouts from this debate, where Trump alleged that Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, are going to eat, or they are eating cats and dogs, people's pets that are going missing. And as far as anyone can tell, this is just a load of rubbish.
Yes.
But it's going to create a lot of good memes and craziness. And of course, then you had Taylor Swift, you know, come out yesterday.
How critical is that? How critical is a big celebrity? She's obviously enormous. She's huge. She's got a massive profile. How important is an endorsement like one from Taylor Swift?
Oh, look, it's quite interesting, because what she said wasn't a total endorsement. She didn't tell all her fans to vote for Harris.
Mm.
She said, I'm voting Harris, and I've done my research, and I think, you know, she's the right person. But she told her fans, basically, you should go and, you know, study up on it and make up your own mind.
Yes.
So she wasn't too heavy-handed on it, and I thought it was quite a smart endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
It will have some impact. I don't think anyone would be too shocked by it. No one was really expecting to come out in favour of Trump. And she signed it off as, childless cat lady. and so that was kind of a dig at J.D. Vance, who had taken on or criticised childless cat ladies.
Yes.
But it also, I think, coincidentally, you know, also met up with that thing about Trump's cat-eating immigrants.
Yeah.
So it's all amusing all round.
Hey, just quickly, one last question for you, Bryce, before we go. How critical was this debate in terms of defining each candidate's narrative moving forward?
I don't think it changed anything for Trump. But yes, for Harris, Kamala Harris, it showed that she is so much better than Biden in terms of being able to win this election.
Yep.
It just shows, it just settles that issue finally, that Biden did the right thing for the Democrats. Democrats have done the right thing in choosing her. She's absolutely a credible candidate for president.
Excellent. Hey, thank you very much, Bryce. We'll check in with you in a couple of weeks' time, mate. Cheers, brother.
Cheers.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.